The Clare Byrne Show on News Talk
with Aviva Insurance.
Could the energy crisis mean a return to remote learning? It's enough to strike fear into the hearts of parents. But one person who believes we should be having this conversation now is Dr. Paul Davis, who's a lecturer in public procurement at DCU. Good morning, Paul.
Good morning, Claire.
Now, many of us remember the difficulty of remote learning when we had to do it during the pandemic. But you think we could be heading back there in part at least, or should be?
I think we should be thinking about it and we should be planning. This is the time to consider what are the best options coming into winter. We had the experience of COVID. It arrived in and immediately every educational institute responded really well with online learning, with supports put in place. But it was rushed. It was often people struggling to try to figure out what best to do. Here we know we more than likely may have an energy crisis coming in. And when we look at the financial costs to most education buildings, it's energy intensive. Now, primary education, I think I said in the article today, was, look, it's critical that that remains open. Any move from physical presence, I think, is both educationally and socially regressive. Secondary education offers opportunities because there are years, maybe second year, whereby we could go online and we stop the ability. Well, we not stop, but we actually look at cohorts going through and think about how to reduce their time in class. And again, there's an energy cost to this. There's the transport, there's the commute, but there's also the energy cost of having the classrooms open when maybe we don't need to.
But
it's at third level. Go ahead.
Third level is where, and I know when you're writing about this in the Irish Times, third level is where you really say that this should happen. And we'll talk about the reasons why and the savings that could be made in a moment. But one of the sort of earliest verdicts from the pandemic, what went right and what went wrong, was around education, wasn't it? And I know you have that concession in what you're saying today to primary. But the damage that was done by having remote learning went beyond primary school, didn't it?
It did, and it went into secondary, and we're seeing the effects of it now in third level as well. But this is where we have to consider cohorts, who they are, and plan for them, rather than suddenly having an ad hoc arrangement hit us in September, October, where suddenly we may be facing a crisis, but energy costs may still be increasing. And again, these are all maybes, but we can plan for that now and then choose how we actually carry out our education system in advance, rather than waiting to react in like we did with COVID. We've got a lot of lessons that we learned in COVID, and a lot of them were positive in terms of the ability of teachers and lecturers to be able to deliver online at very short notice, but who actually thought about what to do. But we do have to look at the socialization aspects of it and ensure that the right cohorts are getting socialized, rather than then making this large blanket agreement. Suddenly we can't do this because the energy costs are too high.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd hate to see that happen, because that's the wrong approach to this when we can actually plan for it.
So let's talk about how it might work at third level. Like you say, some of the lectures that are delivered when you're just sitting there listening and taking notes could very easily be done at home. But then we hear about the missed social opportunities around people staying away from college, whether that's because they can't get accommodation or for, you know, when it comes to energy costs, they might be facing a long commute. So we know that those problems exist as it is. I mean, how do you mitigate against that if you follow through on this plan?
Well, what you do is you choose the days that you want people in, you choose the cohorts that you want in, and you make sure that you balance it out. I said it very clearly that you've got to look at the type of classes that you're actually giving. So a more considered model, I pointed out, would combine that asynchronous online learning with targeted in-person engagements, such as seminars, workshops. So you're only bringing them up for one day a week, rather than spreading lectures out over 3-4 days, whereby they're in class. It's thinking creatively. People have considered online to be bad, but asynchronous online content and online learning is not a bad thing. And it's shown that it can work very effectively with adult learners. And we are dealing with adult learners at third level. We're not dealing with children. We're dealing with adult learners who have a capacity to plan.
But when you look at the costs, Paul, around dropout rates, if you follow this path?
I don't think so. I think what we do is we build the engagement levels in such a way that we actually bring students in at the right time. I'm not saying that we get rid of first years arriving on campus, because first years is where you build your networks and you build the alliances that you need. Second year offers an opportunity for maybe doing more online delivery, because where you've got large classes, particularly in business faculties, social sciences. And I know many of my colleagues may disagree with me, and I understand that. But I think we need to have a serious conversation about this.
Mm-hmm.
I sit in a business school and I'm looking at, with the impact of the Middle East, perhaps postgraduate numbers declining, and therefore a direct impact on turnover that's coming into the college. And that turnover, given that most colleges are operating on a knife edge, will be removed also because of the increases in energy costs. We have to start trying to put some practical plans in place to deal with this. And I'd rather plan for my education rather than arrive at it by default.
Okay, so why are the postgrad numbers declining?
We relied, like the UK did, and like a lot of countries, on two cohorts, Chinese and Indian. And with the Middle East setting, it's actually started to bring down the level of people that want to travel at this stage.
Okay.
There's a fear of moving away. And that's a big impact on us at this point.
So let's look at the savings that you think could be made if you have some students remote learning, particularly at third level. You could shut down blocks, not heat them, not light them, and cut your energy bills. Is that what you're suggesting?
It's significant, yeah. And you're also not just saving on that. You're giving some foresight to the students who would be coming on campus, maybe arriving up. And we've heard this over the last few weeks of students talking about how they can't get accommodation, some of them sleeping in cars, some of them not turning up to lectures because they can't actually get here. So what you're doing is you're actually giving some stability for students to be able to plan how they're going to do it, so they can stay at home, they can do their lectures, they can attend lectures. But we're not involved in this rush to get accommodation that the students are giving out about.
Mm-hmm.
It's trying to find a balance in there for everybody, but we need to plan it.
Yeah, I mean, this is going to solve a problem potentially for those institutions, but it might create a problem for the homeowners who are getting in touch this morning, who are saying that hundreds of people heating and lighting their homes, how is that more energy efficient than doing the same in a single large building?
The difference is that a single large building is very much underutilized. A single home, look, I have to be very careful of being facetious, but having grown up in the 70s, an extra jumper always seemed to work for me as a student. Now, that seems very facetious, but
you can wear the extra jumper in the lecture hall.
The problem with it is it's not one lecture hall, it's a whole building or whole sets of buildings. And we've got to start prioritizing it. When you look at the cost of energy and you look at the rising costs that are impacting, but also the decrease in income coming into universities, some decisions will be made. The question is, will we wait until we have to make these decisions in September, October, to the detriment of the learning, or will we start planning for that learning now?
Mm-hmm.
And that's the real point of the debate here, is at least let's have a debate on it. Let's raise it. Because at this point in every academic's career, as we look at where we are in the cycle, we're starting to finish up this year, but starting to plan for next year. And as we start a plan for next year, then we need to take account of maybe different ways of learning and different ways of doing things.
Are we at that stage yet, though? I mean, we don't know what is going to happen with the situation in the Middle East. I mean, do you think even if it was solved tomorrow, which is very hopeful, but even if it was, that we will be in a situation where institutions, educational institutions, won't be able to pay the bills?
I think they're already there. I think the reality is that educational institutions are already suffering cash flow crisis. There's a number of them already under the HEA auspices of managing their finances because of pure management before. The increase in energy costs is substantive for most colleges because of the number of buildings that they have to heat. And we can kid ourselves and say that that won't threaten things, but it does. If you add that to the crisis of student numbers dropping away at postgraduate, which we've a high dependency upon most colleges again, and you've got to look at the income that comes in from an international student versus an Irish student, it's twice the income.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're losing students at 20,000 euros, you know, 100 students is starting to add up to 2 million. That is directly impacting your cost base of running the institution.
Yeah, but, I mean, you're asking the students here coming from Irish secondary schools into third level to sort of suffer the consequences of the business model being fundamentally flawed.
I'm asking everybody to consider that if the business model is flawed, rather than see the institutions make a rash decision in October, November that damages the learning, to think about how we could do it upfront. Because that's the key part here. We can plan for this. We did extremely well with COVID, but we reacted in. This is not about a reaction. This is about planning our education systems.
But why aren't you, Paul, calling for more funding from the government to bridge the gap?
Well, here's the catch. The government has already paid 550 million out in funding, in terms of short-term funding for fuel. We know that they're hoping that this will all be resolved, but we know that there's an impact on cost of fuel that's going to continue over probably the next 5 to 6 weeks at least. That may continue long-term into the winter, in which case any surplus the budget has is probably going to be diverted trying to just maintain in terms of the general population. When it gets down to education, you can't change a business model overnight, but you can start adapting the business model to cater for different circumstances. So I don't think you can call for more funding. I think you have to get better management of the funding that's available for the universities, for all education systems, and think about how we do it better. And doing it better, by the way, is not saying that online is cheaper. It's just saying that you're shifting the way you do your learning to something different. But it will reduce costs down. You know, it's a conversation that nobody wants to have.
No, and I see that from the messages coming in this morning as we're chatting. I mean, are you suggesting that this would be a short-term measure, or does it change the model of how education is delivered at second and third level?
I think we have to look at education as we go forward, particularly with the use of technology. I think that the education model has not shifted enough in the adaption of online learning. We do know it works. We do know it is actually very critical in terms of supporting students. A lot of the third level for institutions are using online models in terms of online material to support students anyway. So moving a lecture online from a classroom base is not a significant change. At second level, it's about planning delivery, but we are already seeing students who do grinds through online systems. So we know the online is part of the mix that we have. We just need to start thinking about whether we want to formally adopt it and then think about the implications.
Okay.
This is an opportunity for us to review it.
Yeah, a listener says, if universities are so worried about students sleeping in their cars, can they please arrange the timetables with that in mind? My son studies finance full time. It's a 12-hour week in UCC, and the 12 hours are spread over 5 days. And that listener asks why. I mean, in the first instance, that's something that could be fixed, isn't it?
It is, yeah. And a lot of the universities are trying to adapt to that. But again, you look at it and say it's 12 hours spread over 5 days. You can condense that into 2 days, but you could condense it into whereby the student is 1 day on site for 6 hours of lectures and the other 6 hours are delivered online. So you can adapt the hybrid model. That gives that student a huge amount of flexibility in terms of the commute, the stay. And that's what we have to try to do. We have to take into account the new reality of our students. It's not a reality where they can come up and just gain accommodation. They can't. They're struggling. And in that struggle, we've got to start adopting our education systems. The point of today's paper was to try to get people to think about this now in May, June, not to come at this in October,
all
November.
Right. Well, Paul, a listener says, listening to this item, I'm thankful that I went to college in the 90s. Being at home, not socialising, staring at a screen, it sounds soul-destroying. It does a bit, doesn't it, Paul? I mean, it's not a great experience for anyone.
Again, for somebody who's been through distance education myself, I did an open university MBA. It depends on how we build the activities around it. So you can build activities whereby the students come on site for condensed periods. And that's what you're trying to do. It's shifting our education model a slight bit differently, but trying to do it with a planned viewpoint rather than a reactive one as we did with COVID.
All right. Well, Paul, thank you for joining us on the programme. Paul Davis there from DCU. And if you have a view on that, do get in touch. 087 1400 106 is the number for your messages.
The Clare Byrne Show.
With Aviva Insurance.
Weekday mornings at 9 on News Talk. Conversation that counts.